I don't know how to confront somebody like that.
I'm reading An Eternal Golden Braid.
I think I saw that update on your Goodreads. What is this?
It's a guy, and he Hofstetter, and he takes Escher, the famous mathematician, or is he the artist?
Is he the artist?
He's the artist.
MC Escher.
Yeah. MC Escher, the artist. Yeah. Bach, the musician. And Gödel is the mathematician, and he takes works that they've done and he ties them together, and it's, I don't even know how to describe it. It's part philosophy, it's exploratory, it's something else. But I thought that the book was semi-relatable to what you were talking about. Like one of the first chapters, they talk about, like, what is reason?
Mm-hmm.
Is reason a thing that you can quantify? Is it, like, is there a lot, like, what is logic? And at least so far, now granted, only 50 pages in the book, the answer is that it's not. You can't prove logic. You can't create, and there's no system that can be created that says, there's no logical system that can prove that logic is a thing. Does that make sense?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit, I shouldn't say it's a bit abstract. It's a very abstract book, but it's very interesting. So when you... I don't know. When I deal with people like that now, I'm obviously a very opinionated person, but I've gotten less boisterous about someone like that. Now I just kind of shut up.
That's someone like Mark.
Yeah, because so, like, when he says something like that, you can't. When it's something that's so far out of the way that you operate, the rules that you use for reason, for logic, you realize really quickly that the only thing I can hope to do is understand. I'm not going to accomplish anything, and this conversation is going to go nowhere by fighting back, right? Because someone who believes that Trump is the father of America, you're not going to. What are you going to do about that?
That's the thing.
You're
I don't
not
know.
Gonna do anything.
It's kind of like watching, you know, endless amounts of television news. I feel like I'm learning something, and yet I don't know what I'm doing with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm getting opinions. I'm getting maybe some facts mixed in with those opinions, and but I don't know what I'm doing with all the information. I'd like to think that it's helping me to understand people like, I don't know. I don't know if he's your average Trump voter. You know, I guess.
Well. Let's step back. Is there an average Trump voter? Because I think with a classical conservative like a Mitt Romney or something like that, or a George Bush Sr., I think there's probably a general profile for that voting base. But when you have Trump, I mean, look at Mark. He voted for Obama.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I've met a bunch of people that voted for Obama and then just... for whatever reason, whether it was spite of Hillary or general passion about what Trump was bringing to the table, voted for him.
Right.
So I'm not sure there is. I mean, you could say rural, white, working class, but that's not all of it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Totally.
So.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a typical one either. And even if there were, I don't know that we can change their minds. I don't know if that's the point anymore, you know?
I think the older you get, the more you realize that trying to change someone's mind is never, it never works.
And I also kind of wonder, like, what's the point on the other side too, right? Because, you know, I'll say it, I'm a Bernie supporter, but I always get these text messages and emails from this campaign wanting me to volunteer. What, volunteer to do what? To, like, talk to people on the phone who are already going to vote for him? Like, you know what I mean? I don't see the point to some extent.
I don't know if you came with me. But I went to a Bernie rally before the 2016 election.
No, I didn't.
And I must have signed up. I must have given them my phone number. And they just, I mean, it was borderline harassment.
Yeah.
The amount of text messages.
Still is, yeah.
And so finally, it was like last week, I think, I texted them back after they sent me the third text that week, and I said, stop.
Yeah.
Just stop. Like, you're making me hate Bernie.
Right.
And he's not even the guy talking to me right now.
Did you give him any money?
I gave him money in 2016. That's nice. Man, I am, we're 10 months out from the election.
Yeah.
I don't have any idea where I'm leaning.
Really?
I don't.
Interesting.
The Democratic Party is about as uninspiring as it gets.
Kind of, yeah.
Donald Trump is forget all of his policy. Forget the fact that he is trying to drum up a war because presidents don't lose re-election in wartime. I can't vote for him because as a man, he's a liar.
Yeah.
And he is he treats the people around him like trash. So I don't know. I don't even know. I mean, I'm so lost right now.
Have you been following it much or have you kind of checked out?
You know what I do is I do, NPR has a 10-minute news recap every morning.
Mm-hmm.
I do that. And then, whenever there's a debate, I'll try to recap. I'll try to like catch a recap of that. But you know, the debates, they're just a bunch of fucking suits, man.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of suits with scripted lines. And I think that was the appeal of Trump is Trump gets up on the stage and he doesn't do any fucking prep. You can tell.
See, I don't feel like Bernie does either. I feel like they are suited to run against each other. So it seems.
I'll tell you what. I will say this. It'd make for excellent debates.
Oh, I think so.
It would just I'd get my fucking popcorn ready.
Yeah.
And have my friends over and
That's worth the price of admission alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm getting more I don't know if I'm getting more conservative or more centrist as I get older.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the shit that Bernie proposes that 4 years ago sounded great.
Yeah.
I struggle to get behind because, you know, he is socialism on a small scale is obviously necessary. Our public education system, our firefighters, our police officers, mm-hmm. maintaining roads, stuff like that. But what it sounds like, and I'll start with this. As I get older, I find more and more that my joy in life comes from overcoming really hard obstacles,
mm-hmm.
right? Accomplishing a task that I maybe had a ton of self-doubt about along the way. And what it seems like Bernie and, say, Alexandria, Cortez, whatever her name is, what it seems like that kind of faction of the Democratic Party is trying to do is actually wealth redistribution.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do we need to get rid of these ridiculous tax cuts that the rich have gotten since mm-hmm. Bush took power? Absolutely. Let's get back to a place where rich people can still get rich, can still get very rich, but they can't get $120 billion rich.
Yeah.
Right? Let's get there. But a lot of the times when they talk, it seems like what they're saying is we want to remove the human condition.
Yeah.
So that and as long as we give everybody a baseline, as long as we have Medicare, which Trump is trying to destroy right now. So McConnell's been trying to destroy it for years.
Yeah.
As long as we have Medicare and we have Social Security, and as long as people have a jumping off point, like a baseline where they can't fall below that, after that, it's on you.
Yeah.
It's on you to make your way, and some people are going to succeed and some are going to fail. So that's what scares me more and more about Bernie. If it was between Bernie and Elizabeth right now, Warren, I would go with Elizabeth Warren.
Interesting, because I was going to ask you about that. What did you think of the whole sexism thing this week?
Well, let's unpack that.
Yeah.
I can't. This is the other problem: is the news is not reporting the news.
Fuck no.
No one's saying the real thing.
Right.
So, let me think of an analogy here. Right. If I'm a huge Minnesota Vikings fan.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If someone came to me and said, the Vikings can't win. There's two problems with this outrage. One, if someone came to me and said the Vikings can't win the Super Bowl, there's no evidence to suggest that they can.
Right.
They never have. Right? They never have. And even as a diehard Vikings fan, I'd have to say, well, until I'm proven or until they win, I kind of have to agree with you.
Yeah.
So the first problem is that there's nothing wrong with saying a woman can't win the presidency because they never have. right?
Yeah.
That's like saying a tortoise can win a marathon. Like, until they do, how do we know that they can?
That's a good point, actually. Yeah. Right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Second problem. The Constitution of the United States guarantees us the right to have opinions.
Right.
So why are people outraged that whether he said or not,
exactly,
that Bernie feels that way?
I don't know.
Like, I immediately was really pissed off. And, like, this is the other problem. I am running out of places to find news where someone can't take something and then unpack it like that.
I think that's the largest takeaway from this.
Like, unpack it like that, like I just did. Like, look at it and say, like,
it's not an issue.
Like,
shrug it off.
Move on. We're getting to the point where, like, people just hear things, whatever they are.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, a woman can't win the presidency or whatever. And they just, without thinking, are just angry.
Right.
And, man, it's funny you ask about that because I don't follow a ton of news. But that one, like, that really degraded any trust I had left in news outlets.
Oh, for sure. I mean, what bothered me about it was how they framed the question. I think they asked... I think in the question they said, Elizabeth Warren confirmed that you said this. And it's like, by use of the word confirm, it suggests that there's an outside source in a two-person conversation, right? When really there's only two people. One says it happened, the other denies it ever happened.
Billy,
that's it.
I confirm that you owe me $1 million.
You might as well.
I confirm it.
You might as well. Yeah. And it sounds factual, doesn't it? And the net result will probably be the same. Nothing.
So that's another layer of bullshit, right? There's no, I mean, there's no, it doesn't appear like there's any standard. Now, I try to listen to NPR, but even NPR, man, like some of their pieces they run during the day, like they had experts on the wage gap.
Yeah.
No, never once during, and they said, we have all this work to do. You know, what women need to be in STEM. This was literally the other day. Never once did someone stop and ask, well, if women should be in STEM, why aren't they in STEM?
Yeah.
Like the most fundamental question.
Yeah.
Right? The news jumps off from this place of wrongdoing.
Yeah.
They don't get to the start. Like, let's get to the start. The start is, women aren't choosing to be in STEM, right? You have no evidence that there's discrimination. Two, there's a Harvard study that says that the wage gap is a fucking myth because of how we choose to pursue jobs, which gender happens to do more overtime, which gender happens to do part-time. I bet you can guess more often. But that aside, back to the point, I don't know where to listen to news anymore.
I don't. I go to Radio Svoboda. I go right to the Russians.
Right to the Russians. Yeah. I mean, honestly, that maybe I'll have to do that. Maybe just listening to Putin's talking points would be a better.
It's entertaining.
A better thing, though, man. But I don't. Where do we? I want to listen to someone that that thinks about things before they talk.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess, I agree, and I don't know where to go either. I look at The Intercept a lot. I look at Truthdig, and I know that they are, I guess you could say that they're the liberal versions of Fox News, I guess, if you're being an asshole about it.
We're talking about who?
They're called Truthdig. Have you heard of this website?
Never
it's pretty good.
Is it like what's that super conservative site, but for liberals? Breitbart? Is it like a Breitbart for
liberals? I don't
think
so. Not really. But then again, I'm sure if you ask a right-wing person, I'm sure they'd say that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
You know, there's a columnist on there I really like, Major Danny Snjørdsen. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. He's a fellow Scandinavian like yourself, I imagine. But he's a Iraq and Afghanistan war veteran who writes very thoughtful pieces about veterans and veteran issues that I think are really fantastic.
But
one of their chief columnists, Christopher Hedges, he's way left, you know what I mean? And very much a pro, social protest, basically saying we need to be out on the streets protesting this kind of stuff. And it's weird because I read it and I say, yeah, this guy's right, but I don't do anything.
As you're sipping your chai latte with your slippers
on. Yeah, I do. Yeah. Because I don't want to be the only one out there.
I don't want to be in the cold by myself.
It's lonely on the streets, man.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the fuck to do about any of this shit. With Bernie, I do literally put my money where my mouth is. I've given him a lot of money, more than I've given homeless people in the last year. I don't know what the fuck that does.
Yeah.
But I haven't done much of anything else. I haven't ran for a life. The thing about Cortez that I think is interesting, a friend of mine was asking me about her. I don't know my own congressman's name, and yet I know hers. There's something about that that kind of bothers me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Or that
her... There's some kind of celebrity for a congresswoman, a representative of a district in New York. Do you know what I mean? Somebody whose decisions have nothing to do with my life. I know more about her than I know.
Well, and the news,
the guy in my own backyard,
the news reports not
or girl. I don't know what it is.
Some 29-year-old woman that has 1 year of job experience that's outraged.
Yeah,
I mean,
and it's nothing against her, to be honest. It's all against the media. I mean, portrayal.
I'm with you. I personally don't agree with the vast majority of things that I've heard her say publicly, but.
So the thing is, I agree with a lot of it. I just don't like the coverage.
Like once a week now, I'm still like in the morning when I'm doing my morning routine and stuff, I'll try to turn on one of the morning national television programs, whether it's CBS or NBC. And I just have been lately, I've been turning it off after like 45 seconds because they don't, the news does not operate from the start.
Yeah.
They operate from some jumping off point of outrage immediately.
Right.
And it's dividing us.
Yeah.
And they always have Fox News on at the gym, and I watch it to see what I would assume is the conservative part of the country is seeing, and they're just as guilty. Man, they're both sides there, and there are sides. I used to think that liberals were right, and now I realize that there actually are sides. Mm-hmm. And neither of them are right. And MSNBC and NBC and CBS are just as guilty as Fox.
Totally.
And so now you've left, and I imagine, and whenever I have a feeling like this, I think to myself, I'm not the only person feeling this way, right? Because I'm not unique. I'm just a dude. I'm just a bro. And I'm just a dude, bro. And so I think there's a large amount of people like myself that have just run out of places to get honest, to get an honest look at things. I mean, people used to trust Walter Cronkite and Dan Rather and Peter Jennings and Tom Brokaw.
Because it was the only source. Like, whether you were right or left, you got your news from the same person. And you had to make up your own mind.
You're right. And if you watch them, they, for the most part, kept their opinions out of it. I did, you know, occasionally when something was huge, you'd see it. Like, Dan Rather went on David Letterman after 9/11.
Yeah.
Dan Rather was the guest on Letterman's first show, I think, a week after 9/11, whenever they came back.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was fired up.
Yeah.
He was like, we're going to get these bastards, blah, blah, blah. But for the most part, outside of massive events, like, they just reported the facts. But they weren't trying to tell you how to feel.
Yeah. Even that is kind of like, what the hell was he doing on David Letterman? That's the thing that always bothers me. Why is Rachel Maddow on Fallon? You know, things like that. Why are they on talk shows? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's their job is not to be celebrities. It's to find the truth and report on it.
I think that given the context of 9/11, I think Dan Rather.
It's a slippery slope, though, isn't it? You know what I'm saying? It's like
you're talking about like a separation of responsibilities.
I kind of feel like that. Yeah.
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 Well,
maybe when he's retired.
You also have to take into account that we're not perfect.
Yeah, sure.
We try to create these rules, but rarely do we follow them.
Mm-hmm.
Rarely.
Mm-hmm.
So the best thing we can do is have rational actors.
Yeah.
But, well, I mean, I'm trying to think of a rational actor right now in the spotlight in the United States of America.
Fucking Anderson Cooper. He's the rationalist of all the actors.
What's his family? The Carnegies? The Vanderbilts.
Vanderbilts.
I mean,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
He's not a real person. He's a fucking Vanderbilt.
I don't really like him that much either. I can't think of an example.
There's no
Edward R. Murrows. There's no Cronkites.
Yes.
There's none of these guys. There's no one that we can really trust.
We need heroes.
But heroes,
by the way, to be a hero, it's as simple as being honest.
Yeah.
That's it.
So do you think that those people would probably say that I am being honest, right? I'm being true to Rachel Maddow, and I'm being opinionated, and I'm mixing it with news. That's my truth. That's my honesty. That's my authenticity. Consume it, consumer. You know what I mean? What would you say to that?
You're saying you're operating from a place of saying you were Rachel Maddow?
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I'm sure they do see themselves as honest. Sure. I'm trying to play devil's advocate.
No, no, you're right. Yeah. So the lens we see the world with is based on what we've experienced, what we've been grown up with, the genes we've been gifted with. Yeah. I don't know how you reconcile those things, but my mom specifically fervently watches MSNBC.
Yeah.
And it just, like, you watch 2 minutes of it, and it's like, fuck, man. Like, of course, they hate Trump supporters.
Mm-hmm.
Of course you hate them.
Yeah.
Because you watch this
shit. Exactly, yeah.
And of course fucking Trump supporters, a lot of them, not all of them, don't like liberals because they watch Fox News. And Tucker Carlson will report on a news story and says, is this the end of America?
Yeah.
Right? Instead of just reporting the fucking news and letting you form an opinion. Right.
And by the way, you should never start a news story with a question. Is it the end of America?
Yes.
But they all do, like, well, that's not news. It's a fucking question.
That's the thing. What do you call it? Because the difference is now, and they're really slick about it, but it makes a difference. They report something, and then they insert some little quip. Is this a sign of a downward slide to hell? I don't know. Yeah. We'll find out at 10, Bob.
Exactly.
And it's like, no. Tell us that fucking Japan just got hit by a tsunami.
Right.
And leave it.
Right.
Leave it alone.
Leave it. Exactly.
Let people fucking decide what they want to do with
it. Right. Leave the speculation off the table.
But, man, it's fucking nuts, dude. You got me all fired. You got me all worked up now.
Well, it's important shit, I think, you know, because I've been thinking about this constantly. The media seems to just be driving the bus right now, the cultural bus. Like before, I think you can make the argument that they were maybe a passenger, maybe just commenting on it. But now I feel like they're just driving the whole thing.
And you wonder why people are turning to comedians and podcasts.
Yeah.
Because where those comments I made about the Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, a woman can't win the election controversy, you can't talk about that on TV, right? Where's the only place you can talk about that? A comedy club.
Yeah.
Or a comedy podcast.
Yeah.
So no wonder people are turning to comedy, which is a sad state of affairs when you're looking for truths, or not even just honest observations.
Right.
You have to go to Joe Rogan. Right?
Yeah.
Or fucking Bill Maher.
But it's funny, though, too, because, I heard Russell Brand talk about this once, comparing comedians to shamans, in a sense. You know, the guys that would hang out, live outside the village, the crazy guys, you know, that you could count on to tell you the truth about what's really going on in the kingdom, you know what I mean? But you can't take them seriously in any other sphere.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's something to that. And so, like, with that said, I guess it's not so sad, is it? It's just the way it's always been, right? You always have the mystic, the shaman, the wacky person that lives outside the margins of society to comment on it, to remind us of how absurd everything is. So I guess it's not so sad, in my opinion. I think it's necessary and important. I just think it's really kind of dangerous how mainstream media, you know, like, in other words, like, you know, I'm surprised that, like, CNN and MSNBC even exist for the most part. You know what I mean? Like, who's watching this shit? You know what I'm saying?
Ted Turner.
That's it. Like, how many people do you know who actually, like, watch this? I mean, my mom. People I know, my dad, older people.
It seems
people
like,
who still get all their news from the TV.
Yeah.
And not from Facebook, which is a whole other problem I was going to ask you about.
Let's not talk about that, man. There's nothing on Facebook except for self-loathing, vanity.
I was going to ask you. I mean, I wanted to bring it up because you divorced yourself from it. Now I'm at the brink where I want to. Give me some tips.
You're going to need to go stock up on water and towels. The withdrawal stage is very dramatic.
Desitin?
You ever seen a heroin withdrawal?
I've seen it. I have.
It's like that.
Yeah, okay. Now I know what I'm in for.
No, I mean, all kidding aside, there was a withdrawal.
Yeah?
And it was maybe 3 or 4 weeks. So I don't know. I think it was 2 or 3 times I, like, deleted it. But then they're so sneaky, those fucks. When you delete it, they say, are you sure? Like 6 times. You hit yes for like the 6th time. They're like, okay, well, we'll delete it in 2 weeks if you don't log back on. So if you log back on, it ends that process in 2 weeks. Because they fucking know, like, it's habit.
Yeah.
It's just, there were times when I had it on my phone when I wouldn't even realize, and all of a sudden I'd just be on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too.
But I would say, for a while, I don't know if it's 3 weeks or a month or 2 months, things are a little darker.
Yeah.
Because you're not getting those little dopamine hits. So it's important to get dopamine hits like yoga, you know, or
right.
go exercise for sure, yeah. meditate, do things that are,
yeah.
you want to, whenever you're quitting something, you don't just want to quit and leave that void.
Yeah.
You want to fill it with something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the most important thing.
One reason why I haven't deleted it completely, and you were talking about Bill Maher on Rogan. I remember one time long ago, Bill Maher talked about how he reads USA Today, not for its journalism, but more just to kind of get an idea of how most of America is getting their news. And I kind of look at Facebook the same way to some extent. I almost feel like you got to stay plugged in just to see how everybody is really interacting and where they're getting their shit from. Do you know what I mean?
No.
Is there any value in that?
No, I don't believe so.
No?
No.
Is that just something I'm telling myself that I don't delete?
It sounds like something you're telling yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of think so, too. One of the themes that we've been talking about a lot on this podcast is nostalgia. And I'm kind of, you know, some of the guests I've had on here, we go to this old restaurant next to here that's done up like a 50s diner. And I kind of think a lot about, is this a good thing, you know, us looking back? You know, I think we can all agree it's pretty normal. We all do it. But is it bad for our health?
No. What are you talking about?
No?
No, the past is what made us who we are. Yeah.
Yeah, but it just seemed, you know, all the TV shows that take place in the 80s and people dressing like it was 20 or 30 years ago. Is there something wrong with it constantly looking backwards?
No. I doubt you could find a period in time where people didn't think back.
Yeah.
You know? No, what would be wrong with that?
Does it play any role in your life? What makes you nostalgic?
Not a lot, to be honest with you. The one big thing is I spent a year abroad, and I was reckless. I was young. I was just didn't have a care in the world. And I do miss the not having a care in the world.
And what kind of things in your life remind you of that time? A song?
When things get stressful.
Yeah.
It's when it's the opposite.
Do you know what I mean? But like, is it like a song that you listen to that takes you back to England, right? That's where you were living?
Yeah, I was in Birmingham, in the UK. So, yeah, there are songs. David Gray's White Ladder. Yeah. You know that album?
Uh-uh.
It's got the song Babylon.
Okay.
It's a great album. Yeah. He's an Irish guy. You should listen to it. But yeah, I mean, there's a few songs, but mostly just I did some shit that I'll never... I can't say I'll never do, but, you know, probably.
Birmingham Nights, cold metal Birmingham Nights.
Dude, I mean, we got so fucked up all the time and made fools of ourselves and ran around and yelled and did whatever we wanted. And
so you're living like a Clockwork Orange over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it was just free, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember there was one night we went out. Birmingham is the biggest clubbing city in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So they have these things that I've never seen in the U.S., but they're like mega clubs. They're like 6-7 stories tall. They've got like 8 different dance floors, like different bars, different themes. And like you get lost and there's just hot people everywhere, like sweating.
In Birmingham?
Yeah, like sweating on each other. And they pronounce it Birmingham.
Oh, okay.
They omit the ham.
I like the ham.
They omit the ham.
It's one of my favorite words.
But I remember one night we were going to go out. And we got to the club we were going to go to, and the line was just way too long. And we were like, fuck it. So we went back to our flat, and there was like 10 of us. And we had this little courtyard in the middle of our apartment building, and it was a little wet and rainy. And I saw a mud patch, and I just, without thinking, went and Superman slid into it. And all of a sudden, someone else joined me. And then chicks started taking off their clothes and literally mud wrestling with
Woodstock.
Me and with each other.
Yeah.
Now, you're a 19-year-old man, and there's smoking hot college babes, like, mud wrestling with each other, and you started the whole thing.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, there's, like, 30 people,
yeah.
half of them smoking hot chicks in their bras and panties.
Yeah.
Like, I'm never not going to miss that. Like, on my deathbed, I'll think of that fondly, for sure.
Do you wonder how many of the other people who participated even remember that? Do you know what I mean?
I bet all of them do.
Yeah.
There were a couple that were, like, blackout drunk, for sure.
But even without the drinking, like things that are just blips on other people's lives that were so important to you, do you know what I mean? I think about that a lot.
I think one of the most self-destructive things that we have going on in society right now is this push for everybody to be happy, right? Why? The reason that Jordan Peterson got so famous is because no one was telling young men that life is hard, right? And so... I think everybody who was a part of that mud wrestling match like looks back on, you know, I think at some point or another in their life, they're having a shitty day.
Yeah.
Looks back and says, hey, you remember that time when that girl's cooter was right next to my face covered in mud and it was
in Birmingham,
middle of January, and it was raining in a courtyard in Birmingham, right?
Yeah.
You know, or the other time that the university set this up, but we participated. I don't know if we still are in the Guinness Book of World Records, but we participated in the world's largest custard fight.
Wow.
They set up, they turned an entire parking lot into a tent and filled it with like 12,000 custard pies. And we just beat the shit out of each other with them. Just to the face. And so, yeah, I hope so, man. Because what a sad world if I'm the only person from that group
that remembers,
that looks back and says, you remember that night?
Nope.
What a sad...
I know what you mean.
What a sad, sad...
So I lived a year abroad, too. What do you think living a year abroad has done to you or for you?
Perspective.
Yeah.
More than anything. I mean... Yeah.
It's weird how, like, it's just 1 year of one's life, right? And yet it's profoundly influenced me in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to look inward, but my mom always says that I came back a changed person.
Mm-hmm.
I had more respect for people, kind of a broader view on things. And I think that's, you know, if someone who's known you your whole life can make that observation from the outside,
mm-hmm.
that's probably a pretty fair assessment. So I'll go with that.
My mom said I came back a drunkard, which is pretty
well, that too.
Standard for
that too.
Anyone returning from Ukraine.
The fact that my liver is still functional is, it's surprising for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. It's something about it, though. Yeah, you're right. It gives you a perspective. It makes you look at your own country in a different way, for sure, to spend a whole year with people who view it through their own lens, you know?
They had... At the university I went to, they had something called Freshers Week,
mm-hmm.
but it was really like 3 weeks long. It was the first 3 weeks of the school year. And a fresher is like a freshman.
Yeah.
Except for in the university system over there, at least the one I went to, it's only 3 years of school. And so they had events every single night. And I remember the first night, it was like a theme and we dressed up like something. And someone said, okay, yeah, the bus is out here. And out in the parking lot outside the dorms, flats. And we went and got on the bus, and they handed us booze.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like what would be the equivalent of an RA here. And I'm thinking, what the fuck? They're handing us alcohol. And then we get to the bar, and they're encouraging everybody to get fucked up. And then what they do is they make sure everybody gets brought home. And England is not, the UK is not perfect. There's no such thing. But they acknowledge the fact that kids leaving home for the first time are going to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of fighting it and giving them tickets and getting them in trouble with things that could follow them for many years in the future, they embrace it and they make sure you get home safe.
Right.
And I was always really impressed, like really impressed by that. And, It's like the Elizabeth Warren comment and the Bernie Sanders thing. We're going to circle back to that probably this whole show, but there's no one making these laws here that wants to talk about the truth, that wants to have an honest conversation. Like, kids are going to drink. Let's not punish them. Let's help them make safe choices. And you know what happens when they make safe choices? They're going to help their, they're going to have, when they have kids someday, they're going to have their help. I can't talk. Help their kids make safe choices.
Yeah, yeah.
When someone says something that's an opinion, let's ask them about it instead of chastising them for it.
Mm-hmm.
And let's look at the statement they said and say, hey, maybe there's some validity to that.
Yeah.
You know? But it's so fucking divisive. And sometimes I don't realize how much it rubs me the wrong way until you ask me about it. Or maybe I start rambling about
man.
It.
So it's my fault.
No, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's a good thing. But sometimes I don't realize how much I hate it until you get into a conversation with someone.
It's very frustrating because I don't know what to do about it. I don't know how to reach out and find common ground with a lot of people. I guess like the best thing I could do, like with Mark. So I don't know if you noticed, but I finally wrote a review on his book, you know, and I I kept it pretty simple, but very authentic, you know, that there were parts of the book I found very moving, you know, especially the stuff about his father. You know, whenever he talked about his personal life, it was very interesting. But I couldn't help but notice that he said a lot of things that were, you know, it's almost like he's proud of the fact that his opinions have made it so he has no friends. You know what I mean? I know it's like emotionally hurt him, and yet I feel like he's embraced it too. Do you know what I mean? To kind of justify his decisions. You know what I mean? That this is a badge of honor.
Yeah.
And I had to remind him that, you know, that I still love the guy. You know, that I don't care what he says. I still love the dude and I still want to be his friend. You know what I mean? And I think that I hope he was touched by that because I meant it. That, like, as crazy as some of the shit that he says, in my opinion, I still like the guy and I still want to find some kind of common ground with people like him.
Can you blame him, though? I mean, we all need to keep our ego in check and, like, let it, like, stop it. We need to step in when it's doing destructive things like that. But if you told your friends, from what I gather from Mark, he just told his friends, like, hey, I voted for Trump, and they jump ship.
Yeah.
What else can you do but harden that wall around your ego?
Right.
I mean, I don't blame the guy at all. Like, is it destructive behavior? Absolutely. But given the circumstance, like, I lost a couple friends because we were out at dinner one night and I just said how I felt about something and they didn't like it, and I probably got a little bit of the way that Mark did, and I feel like that's a normal human reaction. Your ego wants to protect you.
Right.
So what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
So there's, I mean, I think there's two problems there. There's one, the fact that we can't just disagree. And two, you know, what you talk about in Mark, I see that in myself sometimes. Mm-hmm. I see it in society too, but an egocentric view of the world.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a self below that. You meditate long enough and you realize that you separate the self from the ego.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize that the ego is not you. It's there to protect you, but it can also be very harmful. And what you can do is keep having these conversations, man.
Yeah.
The worst thing you can do is try to do something on a grand scale. The best thing you can do is have people that you just have completely opposite viewpoints and bring them here.
Yeah.
And have a conversation with them. And
I think you're right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, just do what you can do, and if enough people see it and listen to this podcast and they decide, hey, I want to go have a conversation, then now, indirectly, you've started something.
I agree, man. I think it's really important to keep these conversations going and to have people on that I don't necessarily agree with.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
I feel like the conversation's kind of stopped. And it's weird because talking to my students, you know, these kind of younger males especially, I don't think they know how to navigate this kind of thing. I think that they have opinions about being a white male. I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, they feel like, what did I do? You know, I didn't do anything to women. Why are all women upset at me all the time?
Yeah.
And they don't know how to have the conversation. And I don't really know how to have the conversation with them, you know? And what I've kind of come down to is, well, it's just not our time right now. Like, we just have to listen. That's just the way it is.
No.
You know?
No. No, you need to be yourself. But one of the things, to your point, is I think men specifically, because of the way the culture is going. I mean, you look at that Gillette commercial that came out and said,
yeah,
men,
yeah,
you can do better.
Yeah.
Like, all men,
yeah,
you can do better. Like, what the fuck, man?
Mm-hmm.
The number of little kids that saw that and had that exact reaction,
right,
that we were just talking about.
What did I do?
Right? He's just sitting there eating a cereal on a Saturday morning. Like, Dad, what's wrong with me?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But
I don't feel like that's the answer. It's to just instill guilt from the very beginning.
Well, you have to unplug. So you talk about, should I get off Facebook?
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the benefits of Facebook, of getting off Facebook, is not just how toxic it is, but I realize now that I had lost the ability to listen to myself. We have thoughts, we have feelings, we have urges inside of us, and they're normal. They're completely normal. But when your attention is in Facebook and your attention is on the media telling you men are terrible and they're all rapists, and white men especially are even though they've done nothing to earn the title, they're entitled. Then that's all you can hear. So one of my big New Year's resolution was essentially to listen to myself and to love myself. And It's only been a couple weeks, but I've really drastically reduced what I'm consuming. And I've spent a lot of time, even in the car ride to work, instead of listening to a podcast, it'll be quiet. And even if that's only 10 minutes, that's 10 minutes there where I get to listen to myself.
Yeah.
And it's, I feel a lot better. Feel a lot better. And when you cut that bullshit out, man, it's like...
I realized that too, that I wasn't spending enough time in silence, and I needed to do that, you know?
Yeah.
Because even my meditation was, you know, guided usually. So it's like I realized that, like, I always have earbuds in if I'm walking. I'm never just silent, and I need to do that.
I do, I put noise-canceling headphones on when I meditate, like the Bose ones.
Yeah.
But there's no sound coming through them. And I do 30 to 40 minutes every morning, and you get to some dark places. But it's good. It's like, it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really healthy, and it, I think that's what the world is missing. And I think about, I'm working in a software engineering position that honestly, I just don't like.
Are you hitting the wall on it?
I'm just hitting the wall. It's a thankless job. What am I doing? I'm building software for gigantic companies so they can make billions of dollars and put more shitty ideas into their consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I don't know what this, I don't know what it looks like, but I would love to just, I'd love to start something where people could just fucking listen and help figure out what they want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not tell you what to do.
Right.
Just help you figure out what you need.
Right.
Because I realize what I need is very different than what you need. My diet is finally, I'm finally figuring it out.
What are you doing?
Well, I started listening to myself, Billy.
What's your gut telling you?
My gut. Well, let me get there. I'm gonna go about this long-winded. It goes back. So listening to yourself is also understanding. What I've realized is that my body will tell me what I want, what I need.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Cravings are not bad, but I used to go on the internet and I'd be like, how to lose weight, and I tried a billion different fucking diets, a billion. But never once was I sitting there and saying. Was I listening? Like, how does my body feel after I eat this fucking piece of cake or steak or whatever? And I've lost 8 pounds since New Year's Day, and I haven't counted any calories. But what I have realized is that just for me personally, carbohydrates don't work. Whenever I have a carbohydrate, it opens the floodgates. I have like one bite of sweet potatoes and 40 minutes later, I'm in a coma. I've eaten 3 pints of Ben and Jerry's, and I hate myself. There's no stopping.
Okay.
There's no stopping. So I've just eaten meat and vegetables. That's it. Seasoned them, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sautéed them.
Sure.
Lots of steak, but lots of asparagus.
Any butter?
Oh, yeah.
What's your butter intake?
My butter intake is supple.
Good, good, good.
Ample. Maybe that's the right word. I'm not a wordsmith, but... yeah, man, I don't know. I'm rambling.
No, not at all.
But I think it's important for people to...
Because that's something we haven't actually talked about, and I think that's true. Like, you have to listen to yourself. I don't listen to myself after I eat. I feel like I eat fairly healthy, and yet I always know I could do better. I don't listen to myself.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be curious if we sit down and do this again sometime, if you know...
Implement some of this stuff.
Like, I bet you it'll help you.
I'm sure it will, yeah. And I've been more mindful of it lately, for sure. I'm a little lazy on the meditation, but I try every day. I still need to know what the difference is between this transcendental stuff and the mindful stuff. I don't know.
I don't know what transcendental is. Mindfulness is what I practice.
Me too.
And it's just sitting with your thoughts.
Right.
And the big thing is not judging them. So we've all had thoughts where we've all had negative thoughts, and they come across and you judge them. You just do.
Yeah.
We're humans. We do that. But to sit there and just allow them to come, allow your mind to go wherever it is. Try to always feel your breath so you're centered, right? That's why they talk about the breath, so that you're centered and you have a focal point. Kind of like sitting in a desert as cars go by. You're watching the cars, but you're centered.
Mm-hmm.
And it's letting those thoughts come and then not judging them, no matter how terrible they are. And I've realized I have some pretty fucked up thoughts, man. But what happens is they lose their bite. If you just let them come, it's like we were talking about anxiety before we started this podcast. It's your thoughts are actually your friend, but you don't know that until you listen to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how can you listen? We're coming full circle. How can you listen to your thoughts if you're not spending the time? If you're not spending the time,
right?
If you're not being with yourself, you can't.
Good point. Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's good, man.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. How long have you been practicing meditation?
2.5 years now.
2.5 years.
I wouldn't say as of late it's been every day, but consistently almost every day for 2.5 years.
That's fantastic.
15 to minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
Most lately, just because of time restrictions, it's been like 30 to 40 minutes every morning.
Mm-hmm.
But then stress hits you and you respond to it differently. You just say, I hear you.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're there, but you're not gonna take me over. And then like my productivity and my focus is through the roof because I don't have control of my thoughts, but I have control of how I respond to them. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. Are you off caffeine now?
I'm off caffeine completely.
Really?
Yeah.
How long now?
I think before last Saturday, it had been a couple months, but mm-hmm. I did have espresso last Saturday and immediately realized, like...
Mistake?
Yeah, huge mistake.
Wow.
So an hour of feeling up for... The trade-off is the rest of the day feeling slightly down and then shit sleep. I mean, absolute garbage sleep. I realize now through listening to my body that I'm incredibly sensitive to a lot of things. Alcohol, one mm-hmm. glass of wine, man, fucks up my sleep, feel like shit, grumpy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Caffeine, sugar.
Sugar gets
me into a more depressed state.
Mm-hmm.
But when it was hard at first because I didn't find this place that I found now where if I do everything right, mm-hmm. if I sleep, if I eat healthy, if I don't drink caffeine and alcohol, my up, what I get out of that is so much better than the trade-off. So much better than the quick hit of caffeine or the first Jim Beam at the bar.
Are you buying, like, when you're buying meat, what are you buying? Are you buying choice stuff?
Grass-fed meat. I'm getting it shipped in from a ranch in Colorado. Yeah.
All right.
I usually get 15 to 20 pounds every 2 weeks or so.
Okay.
Yeah. And then lots of bacon from Whole Foods. Lots of bacon. But, I mean, it makes a difference. It makes a huge difference. And if you eat, or if you've, whatever healthy is, whatever your body needs.
Yeah.
If you do that for like 3 straight days, it builds.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel this clarity and this calmness wash over you. Now, for you, you may need more carbs. Some people fucking need lots of carbs. But it's pretty wild.
Hardest thing is the added sugar, man. Like, I have a hard time avoiding it, you know?
Well, if you just eat whole foods,
mm-hmm.
then it's not an issue, right?
And for the most part, I do, or at least I have been.
If you're just eating fruits, and then there's nothing wrong with the sugar in fruits, as long as you're not having, like, 14 apples.
Exactly.
Which...
Trying to cut it down.
We've all been there.
Yeah.
We've all been there. But, yeah, man.
Well, at least you're not bald. You got that going for you.
What do you mean?
Nothing. Just throwing that out there. You got great hair.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah. You're welcome, man.
I think I got pretty lucky with genetically, and you can't control that, unfortunately. But
I know.
The height and the hair.
So. Well, but there are stuff obviously we can do to like mitigate some of the things we're born with.
So what else have you talked about? Who have you had on this podcast?
I've had Ricky on. Basically, I had him on 3 times just to test out the stuff.
So what's up, Ricky?
Yeah, I've had Becky. She's been on again. Remember Becky?
What was Becky's book? Was Dragon Tooth or something? what was it? I have a copy of it.
Dragon Wing. Yeah.
I'm going to read that, Becky, I swear.
It's really good.
After an Eternal Golden Braid, you're next.
Yeah, it's really good. Mark, Anthony's been on. Jen, she was on. And the gentleman who's giving me use of his office, Dr. Stefano. So he's an interesting guy. He's got a lot of really good, interesting theories about Medicare. And, like, the thing is, I feel like he doesn't really know where to come down on the issue either, you know, on Medicaid for All. Because he's a very, like, he recognizes completely that the insurance system is broken. He does not take any insurance. Everything is just a straight up transaction. He charges clients much like a gym membership. Individuals pay $80 a month.
Yeah.
And you have as much access to your doctor as you want, make as many appointments as you want, discount insurance, et cetera. And I feel like it's so weird because, like, my own job working in a school, it's a private company I'm working for. But one of the reasons why I feel like we do make an impact is because I don't work for a public institution where there's so much bureaucracy and rules. Do you know what I mean? I can kind of make up anything I want. You know what I mean? I can do whatever I want with these kids, which is kind of scary on one end. But on the other, I'm able to do a lot more, you know, because I don't have to ask permission.
Well, think about it. I mean, you know, I'm from Minnesota where there's wicked blizzards and snowstorms and brutal winters. Here's an illustration of why capitalism makes sense. We do need a government-provided social safety net, but for the most part, capitalism needs to be the king of the mountain. If your car breaks down on the side of the road in a blizzard, you call the police, it may be 4 or 5 hours. You call Uber, they'll be there in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just
AAA, whatever.
It's demand.
Yeah.
It's demand. Like, and capitalism ensures that there's a company that is always there to fill demand.
Yeah.
And that company only survives if it takes care of its clients. Now, are there companies that make, you know, that fuck their stakeholders and make poor choices? Yeah, but for the most part, it's a good thing.
Are you distrustful of rich people in general?
No.
No.
The other way around.
Yeah. The other way around, you distrust poor people, or they distrust you? Rich distrust you?
No, I trust the way that rich people operate.
Mm-hmm.
They operate out of a sense of security to themselves, right? They need more money. They're going to take care of their money. They're going to be very careful about who they give their money to because they understand the value of it, right? Now, I'm not insinuating that poor people are poor because they don't understand the value of money. But I get it. I get why people vote for Trump. If you're wealthy, you're going to have an easier time staying wealthy with Trump in charge than
Bernie. Alternative, yeah.
Than Bernie.
Yeah.
So I understand it.
The self-preservation factor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I read a book called The Millionaire Next Door, and it's a book that describes the tendencies of the average millionaire. It's all data driven, and you know common sense would tell you that the average millionaire drives a Porsche or something or a high end BMW or Mercedes. No, the average millionaire, the most common vehicle driven by a millionaire is
Prius.
No, not a Prius.
What?
Ford F-150.
Okay.
You know why? Because it is the most, pound for pound, you get the most car for your money than any other
car, I guess.
Any other
right?
car, yeah. And, like, the statistic was that 90% of millionaires have never spent more than $50 on a watch.
This is true, yeah?
Yeah, now, yeah. you're going to hear about people that are exceptions to this rule. When you hear about Kim and Kanye...
Well, yeah.
You know...
But I mean, I'm just trying to think about millionaires I've met, and I've certainly met a few, and it's... Like, I'd say, like...
They're not flashy people.
Most of the ones I know, just anecdotally, they're not very flashy. My uncle was one. He was, like, very modest. A few other people I've known.
Yeah.
But I still feel like they spent more than $50 on a watch.
It's a very interesting book.
It actually sounds like it.
Puts things in perspective.
And I've heard that said a lot too, that they don't really live the way they're portrayed on television. You know.
And people who do live like that, generally that wealth doesn't last.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You can't squander it, I suppose. But at some point, doesn't it just become a bunch of arbitrary digits on a banking app on your phone? Do you know what I mean?
No, absolutely not, dude. That's safety.
Yeah.
That's safety.
But how many of those digits do you need before you feel safe?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
There's a study I saw that said $75,000 a year in the city of Denver is kind of that. After that, people's well-being, it's the increase, if you're thinking about X, Y axis, unhappiness starts to diminish. It starts to get exponentially less.
Sounds about right. I'm not even anywhere close to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but just the safety to know that if I hate my job and need to leave, or something bad happens to me medically, or I'll be fine. I mean, that's worth everything.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then that allows you the mental freedom to pursue what you want.
Mm-hmm.
So
when you leave here, what do you think you're going to do? Do you think you're going to be in the same field, or do you think you're going to do something
else? I want to be in the same field, but I want to find a company that, I want to find a company that is making a difference. And I would love it to be, you know, helping people, help themselves.
Yeah.
The other problem is I don't believe technology is a path to happiness, which puts me in a bind. I don't think technology has made anybody happy.
Mm.
It certainly made data more accessible. It certainly made it easier to hail an Uber from the bar. But I don't think a cell phone is made. Certainly when I leave my cell phone at home, I feel way better.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
I don't feel like shit. I feel like shit whenever I look at my phone. My attention, I'm not present.
I agree.
I can't give love to the people that deserve it, that are around me. I can't focus on the tasks that need to be done.
Yeah.
I don't appreciate things. You know what I did the other night for the first time in a while? I just sat down, turned up the volume of my speakers all the way, and listened to a whole album.
What was it?
With Teeth by Nine Inch Nails.
Oh, no kidding.
I just got the reissue on vinyl. It's fucking incredible.
When did that one come out? I never heard that album.
I think it originally came out in 2005, but okay. It was one of those deals where they only pressed a few,
mm-hmm.
and they sold out right away. And Reznor's amazing.
Fuck yeah, he is, yeah.
And so people for years have been like, I'm not going to pay $600 to get a used copy of this.
Yeah.
Like, so there's been demand, and he's finally going through his entire catalog and remastering them one by one.
Wow.
And they just released With Teeth, which I think is their best album.
Really?
And
did you grow up on them?
No, I got into them 5-6 years ago.
Okay.
But he
I've
did.
Kind of been around since the beginning, and it's weird that like I went all the way up to the Downward Spiral,
yeah.
and then I just kind of checked out, because for years that was considered the pinnacle.
Yeah.
You know.
That was their third album or something?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Other than also listening to myself, talking about that, I'm starting to realize I like some really dark music, really angry music.
Yeah, give me some examples.
Well, I mean, I've always loved Rage Against the Machine.
Right.
Always.
Yeah.
But there's this French metal band called Gojira. And
okay,
it's if you're in that kind of mood for French metal, dude,
yeah.
give it a.
All right,
it's Gojira.
So it's Godzilla, right?
It's Godzilla. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Gojira,
yeah. Gojira. That's awesome, man. All right, dude. Well, thanks for the tips. Thanks for coming by and talking, man.
Anytime, William.
All right.
Take it easy.